You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Samantha Wright, filling in today for Gemma Gaudette. On Monday, a federal judge struck down the Biden administration mask mandate for planes, buses, and other public transit. So far, Delta Airlines, American, United, Southwest, Alaska, and JetBlue have all made masks optional, and many people are confused and worried about what to do while flying on a plane. Joining us today to sort out the confusion is Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. And if you have a question for Dr. Pate, send us an email right now at idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Good morning, or I guess it's good afternoon, Dr. Pate.
Hi, Samantha.
Hi. So a judge struck down the travel mask mandate. It's over now. So what do we do if we're flying on a plane? Wear a mask? Don't wear a mask? Help us out.
Yeah, well, I think what we have to understand is, number one, this isn't over. We still have coronavirus out there. We're watching BA2 right now, and it's possible, we don't know, but it's possible that we're going to see a surge. This is a more transmissible strain. And so even though airplanes may have very good ventilation and air filtration when they're up in the air, it still may not be enough to protect you if the person sitting next to you is infected. I was intrigued by a Twitter poll, which is obviously not scientifically done, but it just gives you a sense of where people's heads are. And when asked, now that the mask requirement has ended, will you ride an airplane if you're ill? 25% of the people that responded said yes. So I don't know what the real number is, but obviously there are people out there who, are not worried about transmitting this to other people. And you may be one of those unlucky people, especially if you're immunocompromised or if you're a child that isn't eligible for vaccination yet. And despite how good the air ventilation and filtration system is, if that person's sitting right next to you, it is not necessarily going to protect you. The other thing that people have to understand now is that it's not just the plane. This means you no longer have to wear the mask in the airport. And of course, airports do not have as good a ventilation or air filtration as airplanes do. And even airplanes, when they are parked at the gate, when you're boarding or exiting, they are not running the ventilation and filtration at 100%, which they do during the flight. It's going to be more on the order of 10%. So that is going to continue to be a risk. So if you're someone who doesn't want to get infected, absolutely, you should still wear a high-quality mask when you're in the airport, when you're at the gate, when you're boarding, and when you're deplaning. It's probably more arguable whether you need to keep that mask on once you're up at full cruising altitude, although I will be.
You will be.
I will.
Gotcha. I mean, you talk about folks who are immunocompromised, and I think a lot of people don't realize that that is a lot of folks out there. And I think a lot of folks who are immunocompromised may be very concerned about this.
Well, they are. And I was very disappointed with the association speaking for the airline CEOs. They made the case that they did not understand why a mask were required on airplanes when they weren't in restaurants and bars. And I wish I had the opportunity to explain it to them because the main thing is I don't have to take my 3 or 4 year old to a bar. I may need to take my 3 or 4 year old on an air flight. And in fact, I've been advising some parents whose children have some very serious conditions and they have to go out of state for care. This is going to be a big challenge for those kids that already have a major underlying medical problem. In addition, it is not infrequent for cancer patients and other types of patients with serious diseases to have to travel for medical care to see a certain specialist or receive a certain treatment. So this will be make it very dangerous for them.
So the question is, will it make it more dangerous than it was before the ruling for someone who has a serious medical condition to travel? Because
it will.
Okay. Wow.
It will. Because, you know, there's a common refrain these days that by those that don't want the mask mandates, and I get it. I don't like wearing my mask either. I don't enjoy it. But they often say, well, if you want to protect yourself, you wear the mask. Well, the problem is we're protecting ourselves from these others who are not wearing the mask. And when you're not wearing a mask, you are emitting this virus out into the air. And we've seen plenty of pretty well-documented outbreaks on airliners where we can see transmission can occur from, one end of the plane nearly to the other. It's not just the person sitting next to you or at the across from you that's at risk. And of course, I suspect most people are like me. I remember taking flights before COVID, and I remember a gentleman sitting right across the aisle from me trying to hack up a lung. And I thought, oh my God, I'm going to get sick. I'm going to get sick. And sure enough, the next day I got it. And so we know this happens. And so it is unfortunate. I wish we could have at least gotten all of our children vaccinated fully before this happened. But, you know, here we are.
So are you concerned? We've been talking about individual folks flying. Are you concerned about more spread of COVID now that you won't have to wear a mask on a plane?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't have to theorize about this. We can look to other examples. For example, not very long ago in the UK, a large international airport was just about shut down because of widespread infections among flight staff, pilots and the flight attendants and so forth. And so we know that if we do get a very transmissible variant that emerges, then yes, a lot of people will get infected. And we still don't have high enough levels of people vaccinated. There's a lot of people with Omicron that infection that believe they are protected, but more and more evidence that actually the immunity to natural Omicron infection probably is of the least duration than any of the prior variants. So now we're starting to see people get reinfected. And, you know, the other concern that I think has been lost in the conversation, because no doubt, Samantha, there's some listeners out there thinking, okay, but I'm in my 30s, I'm in my 40s, I'm not going to die if I get COVID. It'll be like getting the flu or the cold. And yeah, I don't enjoy that, but I'll get over it and I'll be fine. I certainly hope that's true. I would have to point out, though, that we are seeing numbers on the order of 30% of people who get infected, this would be adults, are going on to have long COVID and having symptoms that are quite disabling, frankly. And none of these people that I've talked to thinks that this is mild or just like a flu or a cold, this is very troubling to them. And 10% of them are so affected that they cannot work full-time or at the work levels that they did before. So this is a big deal. Add on to that, that we are getting what we call signals. That is, we don't have conclusive proof, but we're seeing signs pop up in our data and literature that, in fact, people who get COVID, and even though they recover, that some of those people may be at significant risk for some very bad things, some autoimmune diseases. I just found out yesterday about a otherwise healthy person who had COVID who dropped dead yesterday of a massive heart attack just 3 months after COVID. And we know that this virus affects the cardiovascular system. We also had a case of a younger man who suddenly had a big pulmonary embolism, blood clot to the lungs, and died. Now, this is going to happen in relatively few cases, but I can't tell people whether they will be the case or not. And besides those, there's a lot of other things that are concerning, and we just don't have a good understanding yet, and we won't for a while. And that's why I certainly recommend people don't be cavalier about getting infected. You might be fine, you might not. I don't know.
Wow. Dr. Pate, you mentioned BA2 in the last segment. Can you give us an update on what's going on with this variant that continues to move around the world?
Yeah, it does. In most places of the world, they that have had BA2 surges, they're on their way down. Some of those countries still have very high transmission rates, like Germany, France, Austria, but they seem to be on their way down. What we're watching is to see what is going to happen in the United States. It's not inevitable that we're going to have a surge. In fact, quite a few people think we won't. I'm a little bit more skeptical, but I'm still not convinced either way, but I am watching it. And what we're seeing right now is that most of the activity of BA2, where states are seeing rises in cases and that are due to BA2, it's up in the Northeast. So it's in Massachusetts, New York, New Jersey, Vermont, that area, and Alaska. And so here in Idaho, we're not seeing evidence of a surge right now. I looked at our Boise wastewater. That looks pretty good. We're not seeing an increase in cases, though we all do have to realize that watching case numbers is going to be underreporting, because so many more tests are done at home these days, or people aren't even getting tested. So we don't really know the total numbers, but we do appear to be in good shape here in Idaho for the moment, because we still can look at the wastewater, we can look at the hospitals, and those are in good shape for the moment. So I think it's we're watching and waiting.
Absolutely. I know you're watching all things coronavirus, as you always do. Tell me about the Moderna. They released some new information on it's a combo vaccine.
Yeah, it's actually called a bivalent vaccine is the proper name of it. But you're exactly right, Samantha. So Moderna is testing two different types of so-called bivalent vaccine. What this means is they're combining the spike protein from the earliest original virus that we dealt with, the ones that we've already gotten immunizations with. And then in one, they combined it with the spike from Beta. I don't remember if people remember that far back in the Greek alphabet. After Alpha, we had Beta. Beta was a real problem in parts of the world. Wasn't an overwhelming problem in the United States, but beta was seemed to be more transmissible, had some more immune escape, and caused a pretty severe illness. So they have combined those two. And the reason for doing that is continuing efforts to see, can we find vaccine, can we tweak the vaccine that can give us better protection that's more durable? And that's what appears to have happened with this combination with beta. They saw a 2 to 3-fold increase in the neutralizing antibodies, and the immune response appeared to be superior to that of just getting the vaccine that those of us that have been vaccinated have gotten. And that superiority lasted for 6 months. They have another vaccine that's still in trials, but they have indicated that the results so far look very encouraging. And that is combining the original virus spike protein with Omicron. And so that particular virus has the spike protein. It has 32 mutations in it. And what they're telling us, the data has not been released for this second one yet, but they're telling us that it does look like that both of these bivalent vaccines not only provide superior immune measures compared to the original virus, but all the variants that we have so far tested them against. So this is very promising. Moderna has indicated that they believe that their bivalent vaccine will be available for this fall. And of course, we've got a lot of other approaches to vaccination in the works as well. I'm excited about the potential for a nasal vaccine that may be quite effective. I think this would be easier and might get more people to get vaccinated. There's also a question of if we use a nasal vaccine, maybe we would be less likely to get breakthrough infections because it can trigger a little bit different immune response. And then there's also a new vaccine that was just released in Europe. It has not been here in the United States, but it's an inactivated whole virus. And there are some interesting questions about whether we could benefit from having that kind of vaccine mixed in. So we don't have very many answers, but there is a lot of research underway, a lot of things being tried and tested, and we may have much more superior, even though these vaccines have been fantastic and better than any of our hopes, really, but we may be even able to do better, perhaps as soon as this fall.
Wow, that's amazing. I think we kind of get stuck on the vaccines that are out there because they've been around for a while and don't think that there's still more research and a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes.
Absolutely.
Can I go back to the travel, the lifting of the travel mask ban?
Yeah, of course.
How did you feel when that came down? You have not been shy about giving us your opinions. But how did you feel? What was your first reaction?
You know, I have to tell you, I was more shocked by the CDC's announcement a couple of weeks than I was by this legal decision. I'm not thinking that it's entirely shocking that the plaintiffs could find a judge that would strike this down, and they did, and they found a judge that was, you know, very likely to be sympathetic to their arguments. So I don't think that was shocking. Although my immediate reaction when I heard about this, see, I have a very close family member who has a very severe immune deficiency, and she's back in Texas. She loves to travel to see places, but her immune system doesn't make antibodies. And then, you know, that we've talked about T cells. She has a defect in a certain type of T cells. So a infection in her could literally kill her, or the worse, the other, not worse, but the other bad alternative that is worse for the general population is that we believe when immunocompromised people get infected, that virus can continue replicating in their bodies for way longer than in those of us that are blessed with healthy immune systems. And what happens, as I've been saying for now 2 years, the more that virus replicates, the more likely you are to develop new mutations. In fact, there was some real concern that maybe the Omicron variant, which was so different than what we had dealt before, might have come from a immunocompromised person that got infected. So we should take these things seriously, even if we don't care about others. We have some self-interest to make sure we're not doing this. I think the thing that really more surprised me, and frankly, I don't know if anger's the right word, because I'm kind of getting over it at this time, but the CDC coming out and, you know, here we are facing a potential BA2 surge, and the CDC is saying, well, we're going to extend the mask mandate on public transportation to, I think it was May 3rd. And I'm like, so how the heck does that make any sense? And I think if the CDC would just tell us their basis for making some of these decisions that seem so outrageous or ridiculous, if they could explain it, what's your thinking? What is the evidence you're basing on this? Because we don't have to agree. But I think what infuriates me and many members of the public health community is when we just see the CDC come out with something that we can't explain. We have no idea how to explain what they did. And I think that, frankly, doing so has made the CDC more vulnerable to a legal challenge like the one that we just had, because one of the legal standards that is used is the CDC decision arbitrary. And if they're, which means they don't have a good reason for it. And that's what's, you know, frustrating the heck out of most of us that are, you know, in public health and healthcare, that it does seem arbitrary. So in a way, I'm not shocked by the judge's decision, but I think this is very unfortunate. I just think there's a lot of people that either are, if forced to travel, they're going to have to put themselves at risk, or they're just going to be further secluded, or they're going to have to say at a time when gas prices are rising and other pressures that, you know, they're going to drive for 2 days to get where they need to go. So it's just, it's disheartening.
Well, I'm afraid on that sad note, we're gonna have to wrap up. We've been speaking with Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. I want to thank you for coming on and helping us better understand what we can do now to protect ourselves, especially if we're going to be on a plane.
Thanks, Samantha. I'll try to have more cheery news next week.
Okay, we'll work on it. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Up next, Dead Man Walking as an Opera. We'll have that story. I'm Samantha Wright, filling in today for Jim Agudat. You're listening to Idaho Matters.